Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
Yeah, that's right.
That guy never gets it wrong, does he?
He never does.
Always spot on.
Who am I today? Am I you? Am I
no,
Andrew
you
David
should
James?
Be Michael Sterling. It's
I am.
Much better casting.
Oh, I am. I was
that's
him last
right,
night, too. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, works continuity, my friend.
Like
played
it.
The role before. How you doing, Michael? Good to
I'm
see you, man.
Good. I'm a disclaimer, wearing contact lenses.
Okay.
Second week. So
how do I look to you in those contact lenses?
Really good.
Oh, then you know they're not
good.
Working, brother.
I'm just adjusting to, I assume it's an adjustment period. Do you wear them,
yes,
Doug and Jonah? Do you wear them?
I got LASIK. So
nice.
Oh, you
did. Very nice.
That's probably what I should have done.
Fantastic. Though.
Buying the contacts for a year's supply is almost as expensive as
LASIK. That's
but,
right.
But my eyes are kind of get teary for some reason. I don't know what that means.
Wow.
Do you?
You're just getting used to it.
Yeah.
You
think?
Yeah.
You're sensitive.
And then someone said, "Are you okay? Because your eyes don't look really, you know." So white, the whites in my eyes, and they don't, do they?
Wow.
Because I think it's an object in your eye.
Yeah.
Your eye is protecting itself.
Yeah, I think that's true, right? But I bet it gets used to it after a while.
I hope so.
Yeah.
For sure.
I hope so. Yeah, but I can see. That's the main point.
Yeah, right, which is a big benefit.
Exactly.
Well, obviously, here we are on June 29th, 2017,
good
and
Lord.
We have some great things to talk about today and lots of exciting events going on.
And that we do, Andrew. And here in the studio with us today, we are joined by the immensely talented Jonah Platt and Doug Haverty.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You're too kind.
Lots of good stuff. Guys, obviously, we're really glad to have you here today, and we're going to get back to you in just a moment. But before we do that, we should take a moment and thank our sponsors, yeah?
We should indeed. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
And obviously, we are very, very grateful to both of them because they do so much for promoting the live arts here in the Southland.
They definitely do, and there's no doubt about that, Michael. And also, we'll talk to our two guests here more in just a little bit. But before we do that, Michael, how was your week? I didn't get to see you much this week.
I know you didn't. You know, it was good. I produced two shows over this past weekend.
Just a normal day for Michael Sterling, producing a couple shows every week.
The 23rd consistent headlining appearance of Tony Award winner John Lloyd Young.
Wow, fantastic.
At Sterling's Upstairs.
A good friend of the show, obviously, and a great performer.
The 23rd time he has sold it out. And it is extraordinary. And he plays in New York. He plays at the Carlisle there, and he also does 54 Below, and he plays in San Francisco at the Nico. And he has an amazing following of people.
Right.
And this was a really wonderful show. He brought in about six new pieces and incorporated it into to the body of the show. And on the following evening, a young man who we had on the program via telephone last week, Jordan Goodsell.
Of course.
And Jordan is one of the stars of Frozen at Disney Resort in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
A very good-looking young man. And it was the most unusual show that I've ever seen on my stage. It was based on his young love life, and it was seamlessly done. With music that was from Sondheim and John Bucchino and Kerrigan and Loudermilk and a lot of these great composers that didn't necessitate any explanations in between the music.
Wow.
And he had guest stars with him who were given their moment in duetting with him, and this we were totally sold out, and it was a 75-minute kind of marathon of the most extraordinary thing.
Yeah.
I don't know how this young man pulled it together. He's only 24 years old, and he put every element together with his musical director.
Wow.
It was very exciting, and the audience was like on their feet just screaming.
Well, I certainly enjoyed having him on the phone here with us last week.
So.
He has a very interesting outlook for such a young guy. He seems very wise.
He's very much
his
a
years,
gentleman,
so.
By the way.
Really?
Yeah, very much so. And his grandmother, who bought some 30 seats up front, is his singing teacher, and she's actually a very, very well-known singing
Fantastic.
Teacher. Yes, and so it was a nice evening, so thanks for asking.
That's great. Well, I'm glad
What about
to hear
you,
that.
Sir?
A busy week. This was a good, obviously, recovering from the Tonys. Did you have a chance to decompress from the Tonys?
I did. Yes, I did.
A cool night, and I thought lots of good stuff recognized there. And I thought it was interesting last week to kind of sit there and watch parts of that and realize that the theater community really has made some huge leaps and bounds in the last few years as far as the kinds of shows that we're recognizing, right, as well as kind of the way that people go about the Tonys. It's so celebratory now, and lots of people really excited about that. I decided to stay home instead of going to any of the Tony parties this year, which I thought was a very good thing. So,
well, you know, I'm going to ask your opinion as long as we're talking about this. Maybe the fellows can chime in here. What was your opinion about Kevin Spacey?
I always liked Kevin Spacey. I actually had the chance to meet him in London a few years ago, and he's a character. I did not think he was at his best that night, but I still enjoyed the segues. I still thought that the through line was enjoyable for the Tonys.
Well, apparently some critics did not agree
very much
with that.
So.
There's
very
some
much
scathing
so.
Remarks about yeah. him. And yeah. I thought, really? I mean, I kind of...
I enjoyed the impressions.
Yeah, yeah you were right? there.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. That's
yeah.
a great thing. Yeah.
Excuse me.
It's interesting because he is such a talented performer. I think he's much more interesting when he's performing than when he's hosting. And I don't know that that's necessarily a criticism other than just he is such a good performer. I think you expect so much out of him. I saw him in The Iceman Cometh years and years and years ago. And I mean, honestly, I've never seen a better Hickey in my life. He was really, he was truly an amazing performer. So.
Well, yeah, I had no problem with him. And I actually, you know, I'm a fan of that awards broadcast because it keeps the arts in front of
That's right.
this country and the rest of the world, and it's an important thing.
Absolutely.
And I don't think anybody can really do anything wrong. I mean, there may be some people who are better than others or more suited for hosting or a little funnier or
right.
more cutting edge.
Or even just good years and not so good years, too.
I mean, exactly.
I thought those scathing comments were out there quite often this year.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Somebody had a bone to pick. No
and
doubt
he
about
himself,
it.
You know, made fun of the fact that Neil Patrick Harris wasn't there and all those
right.
other people that you might have expected would have gotten that job.
But, of course.
Yeah, very exciting. And we'll talk to Jonah about his personal experience at the Tony Awards with his family this year, too, when we talk to Jonah.
Very excited to hear about that. Well, shall we dig into our first guest here, speaking of Mr. Jonah Platt? Shall we talk about him a little bit?
Absolutely.
Let's say some nice things. Here we go.
Yeah. Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, is a multi-platform creator and performer whose eclectic career has spanned many facets of the entertainment industry. He recently starred as Fierro in Broadway's smash hit Wicked. Other favorite stage credits include his breakout turn as Wolf in Hair at the Hollywood Bowl, Jason in the L.A. revival of the beloved musical Bear, and Homer in the Ovation Award-winning production of Floyd Collins at La Mirada.
TV credits include Parenthood, The Office, and Curb Your Enthusiasm. He has just wrapped shooting on his first feature film, The Purple Rose. Upcoming projects include voicing a new character for DreamWorks' animated series on Netflix, assistant vocal arranger to music supervisor Tom Kitt on the Broadway adaption of Alanis Morissette's iconic Jagged Little Pill, and co-composer on the upcoming musical stage adaptation of Lois Lowry's international bestseller, The Giver.
He is currently starring as Bender in The Last Breakfast Club at Rockwell Table and Stage now through July 22nd, and is directing the acclaimed Worst First Kiss production of Burt Royal's Dog Sees God, now in its second extension, and which we will be talking about more today. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for Jonah Platt.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome,
yeah.
Jonah. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So
great
you've
be
been
here.
Busy, man.
It's been a hell of a spring, I'll
right?
tell you that. Yeah, it's been crazy.
You got to tell me a little bit about Floyd Collins, because I think that is such an amazing show. I was raised in Kentucky, so it has a personal connection
sure.
to me. But it's interesting, too, because it's not done that often. I think it's a hard concept for artistic directors to grasp when they're including it in a season. What did you think of that, and do you think that show has a life ahead of it as much as I hope it does?
Well, it's for me, it's one of those bucket list shows that
right.
I always wanted to be a part of ever since I was introduced to it. And when I saw that La Mirada was doing it, it's far away, La Mirada from LA, but that they were doing Floyd
right.
Collins, I was like, I've got to be a part of this somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it has a life. I think it's tricky because Adam Gettle's music is so sophisticated. It's hard to take in the first time you hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Once you allow yourself the time to get into it, it opens itself up to you, but it's not, you know, you can't just go see a show and then walk out humming at intermission. It's just
so
not
true.
That kind of show.
That's right. It's like reading a novel in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
I mean,
you have to be patient
and
give it some multiple listens and you'll be rewarded.
Right.
And I feel that way about all his music. And I think that there is a growing community within musical theater that has taken the time to learn the music of Adam Gettle and appreciate it. And I hope there'll be more productions of Floyd Collins with a little more daring and fun ways to interpret it artistically.
I've always felt that was one of the great benefits of the show, is that it can be done artistically so many different ways.
Absolutely.
You can do it representational, or you can do it completely realistic. And I thought that it was interesting to see that La Mirada did it, because they're one of the few theaters who had the artistic know-how as well as the resources to really do it right. So I'm glad that you got a chance to do it.
Who's the target audience for that show?
Well, I thought it was me when I saw it, because it was so personal to me. But it's a good point. It's a
tricky.
Younger Musical.ly show. I think it's got a young trend. But I think, I don't know if you felt this way, but when I was reading the script, it read much differently than it played on stage.
Hmm.
Like, I watched it and I kind of felt like, hey, this is something that's something for the more intellectual people. But on stage, it's got such a passion and such a youth about it.
Yeah, I mean, I can feel that. I can say I've never seen Floyd Collins. I've only
funny.
Been in it. what you describe is sort of the way that it definitely impacted our audiences, I know, from, you know, interacting with them. It's very moving. It's very personal. It's really, you know, at the core, it's about relationships. It's about a dream. It's about a dreamer and then his brother, his parents, and
right.
those familial ties and those conflicts. Of course, ultimately, it's a very sad story as well, and that's
right.
deeply moving.
And a true story,
and
too.
A true story,
that's
which is
one of the
just
most
wild.
Heartbreaking parts.
Learning
about
all about his real story was fascinating.
Did you see your audiences trending younger or older?
It was a real mix. I mean, we got a mix of I feel like the younger crowd were the big musical theater aficionados, like the people who were familiar with the show already, but had never gotten the opportunity to see it mm-hmm. or had heard about it. Or we're just interested in seeing what's this about. And then an older crowd, is the more typical La Mirada subscriber crowd,
right.
Was also there.
Interesting.
Let's jump into the show that you are doing right now, because that is also something that is cool and appeals to a younger audience.
That's right.
I think so. Although we're getting a nice balance.
Are you?
Yeah. I mean, so we're doing The
it's
Last
a
Breakfast
classic
Club.
Classic film, yeah.
Classic film from the 80s. So we're getting a good age range in there. We're actually, the crowd is skewing older than I anticipated when we opened, because people in their 20s and 30s kind of, that wasn't their coming of age story.
Right.
They know it now because it's a classic film.
Right.
But that's not what they grew up under. That's more people in their, you know, 40s and 50s. What we do, it's basically a sequel to the original movie, with elements parodying the original movie,
mm-hmm.
But it takes it in a whole new direction, and it sort of picks up on the timeline where that movie left off all these years later.
And is it featuring music that was
film? Yes, some in the film, but mostly just awesome 80s jams. You know, like Sweet Child of Mine and Love Will Lead You Back and Everybody Wants to Rule the World. And a couple 90s jams snuck in there, too.
And you have a young man by the name of Garrett Clayton in the show.
Certainly.
Does he play opposite you, or are you the two leads?
There's five kids who are trapped in this library. There's the brain, the athlete, the basket case, the princess, and the criminal. And I'm the criminal,
mm-hmm.
and Garrett is the brain.
Typecasting again, my goodness.
Watch your wallets. And Garrett is one of the five who plays, he plays the brain, he plays the nerd. And then we've got Max Eric, Anna Grace Barlow, and Lana McKissack. Rounding out the group, and then there's two adult characters.
I love Lana McKissack.
She's amazing.
Oh my god,
she's a blast. She's she always is trying new things on stage, and is a great improvisational actress,
right.
and just so talented, and a pleasure to be around.
Totally.
Brings a lot of joy.
Have
to
you
what she
seen
does.
Her video series that she has made with
no,
her husband?
No, I haven't.
It's you've got to
check
it out.
I know that's like her bread and butter, but I haven't got a
funny,
chance to watch
funny
it.
Stuff. She's very very interesting. And Garrett Clayton certainly has a career, a smart career of his own. It's funny that you said playing the nerd. He certainly doesn't look like a nerd. He's like a super handsome guy, just like you.
Thank you.
And yet those are the roles that he plays. You know, he plays the nerdy guy.
He's got a real quirk to his personality that I think
Teen Beach Movie
well
and all of these big Disney things that he has done. Disney's really made a star out of him, I think.
Now, can you tell me a little bit about Sweet Child of Mine, this track that we're going to hear a little bit of?
Yeah. Sure. So this is, it comes kind of early in Act Two. There's a big sort of twist in the show that I don't want to give away, but it's just happened, and everybody's minds are kind of blown. My character decides that the only solution can be to go to his locker where he's been storing a bag of marijuana for decades and proceeds to sing a love rock anthem to his bag of weed. Sweet Child of Mine.
What? Now, we said this is a sequel. Does it pick up directly where the movie leaves off?
So it picks up actually today.
Okay.
But as if the timeline has been running since then. So this is like, decades later. From the movie, the kids have been trapped in the library ever since their first detention because the nuclear apocalypse happened outside.
Awesome.
And they don't know that they can go outside. So they think they're the last people left on Earth just stuck in this library.
And so this is Sweet Child of Mine, and I don't have the ability to cue this up, so we're just going to start at the beginning and let it play a little bit.
So you have to start it from zero?
Yeah, but we'll let it play up just a little bit. Is there a mark that's a little bit better to pick it up from?
If you could pick it up from just before the minute mark.
Okay, let's see if we can get there. So, and as you talked about the nuclear apocalypse, which of course is something that I think we all deal with on a daily basis.
Of course.
The fear of that. Can you tell me a little bit about where this song comes from as far as the composer's idea of what it does in the show? Does it transition into Act Two, you said?
So yeah, it's at the top. I think it's to bring a lot of energy to the moment. Everybody in the show sort of gets a big solo to really shine.
Okay.
And this is Bender's takes me physically all around the space, all up in the audience faces, which is one of the exciting features about performing at the Rockwell, is that immersive staging. This is my time to shine.
All right.
Well, let's hear a little bit of this, and I think this is queued up properly. Let's go ahead and give it a try. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Sweet Child O' Mine. Pretty cool. Wow.
Very cool.
So would you call this a rock musical? I mean, it certainly has a rock feel.
Definitely. I mean, that's the famous Guns N' Roses song.
Of course, yeah.
There's some quieter moments. Living Years by Mike and the Mechanics is one of our slower numbers. And,
so it's not, it's multiple artists from the 80s and
yes,
early 90s.
It's like a jukebox 80s score.
Cool.
And then there's just a lot of improv, a lot of comedy, and then there's also a message to it. The creators really wanted to try to say something with it as opposed to just a run-of-the-mill straight parody.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because that movie is iconic in every sense of the word, right? I mean, the archetypes created of the 1980s Breakfast Club stick with us today.
Absolutely.
I remember when I first got into high school. Of course, I went to high school well after this, just so everybody knows.
You went to high school?
I did, but I didn't pay attention. Don't get messed up there. When I got in there, I remember one of the first questions I asked when I was a freshman was, hey, what kind of music do you listen to? And as a stupid kid in the middle of Kentucky, I went, whatever's on the radio. You know? I mean,
yeah.
I didn't have any music type. And they said, well, you're going to need to know, do you sit with the country people? Do you sit with the rock people? Are you a rap guy? Are you alternative? Are you goth? And I remember thinking, I don't know. I need to make a lot of decisions very quickly.
Yeah.
I think that all comes from that Breakfast Club ideal
totally.
Of who are you in high school.
And then, I mean, what this show does is sort of play with those archetypes a little bit and break them open for 2017.
And obviously with that reflection of age, it's got to be so surreal to look back at that and go, yeah, we all experienced that in high school, and it forms who we are, and yet it's totally different 10, 20 years later. So,
oh, absolutely.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's switch gears now to what he's directing.
Absolutely. And boy, this guy never quits, does he, Michael? My goodness.
He's a working boy.
And real quick, we should just say, this is called The Last Breakfast Club. That's the name of it, correct?
Yes.
The Last Breakfast Club. And tickets can be obtained by calling 323-669-1550, or you can visit www.rockwell-la.com. That's www.rockwell-la.com.
And it's a lovely venue as on Vermont Avenue in Los Feliz, which is a beautiful, beautiful area of Los Angeles. So, and it's there until the 22nd. So
yeah,
you have plenty of time to get over there, have a great meal, and a fantastic show.
But now let's talk about what he's directing.
Yep. Dog Sees God.
What a great title. Dog Sees God.
Dog Sees God. That's a great piece.
And it's kind of subtitled Confessions of a Teenage Blockhead, correct?
Correct.
Did you name it after me, or was that just a coincidence?
Total coincidence. I had a feeling I'd be running into you.
That's right. What's the theme behind it?
So it's a show that's about the Charlie Brown Peanuts characters as teenagers.
Oh, great.
It's an amazing piece. It's really quite heavy material. It really tackles issues that matter to teenagers. Drugs, sex, mm-hmm. suicide, LGBTQ issues, bullying. It's a really hilarious and also moving piece. Our audiences never know when to be crying or laughing. And what's so unique about our production is generally this show is done with adult actors playing the teens because of the nature of the material. It's a lot of heavy lifting for actors.
Sure.
So typically even the playwright himself has discouraged teens from trying to attempt it. Our production is all teenagers playing teenagers, and in fact it is produced entirely by teenagers.
Wow.
An amazing company called Worst First Kiss Productions that was started all by teens and that's sort of a throwback to all of their worst first kisses on stage as young actors.
Which we could probably fill in with our embarrassing moments section at the end of the show. We've had a few of those come up. So,
these kids are fantastic. And it's been such a pleasure to work with them and mine Burt V. Royal's incredible material. There's so much richness to it. And the kids have done a great job. And we were fortunate enough that Burt came to see the closing of our last run at the Hollywood Fringe.
That's great.
And was absolutely blown away and wrote us the nicest letter about how we basically proved him wrong of 13 years of discouraging teenagers from doing it.
He really?
Just hadn't found the right teens. And now these kids have done it. Brought new nuance to the characters that he had never seen portrayed, made him proud that he had written those words, and he'd seen it hundreds of times and felt like he was seeing it for the first time with a whole new set of eyes.
That's a great compliment.
So it was really amazing.
Well, and this is, of course, taking place at the Blank Theater in Hollywood on Saturday, July 15th at 2 and 5 p.m., Sunday, July 16th at 6 p.m., and Sunday, July 23rd at 6 p.m. There will also be a special encore performance on Saturday, July 22nd at 2 p.m. as part of the Fringe Encores Award.
Yes, we were awarded by the Fringe as part of their encore series, which they bestow upon productions that have gotten a lot of both commercial and critical acclaim throughout the Fringe run. So we're very proud of that.
And tickets for the performances on the 15th, 16th, and 23rd are available at
I'll give you a shorter version.
Okay.
They're available at WFK, that's Worst First Kiss, WFKDogSeesGod.brownpapertickets.com.
There you go.
And we love Brown Paper Tickets, obviously.
And or if they went to Brown Paper Tickets and just did a search for Dog Sees God, they
would
come right up.
And worst comes to worst, make a phone call to those great people there. They're really good on the phone as well.
So,
and obviously, their social media, you've got them on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook on Worst First Kiss Productions. So that's a great way to find out more about them. Now, you got to tell me real quick, we've seen a ton of this sort of thing of taking childhood idols like Charlie Brown, or I'm thinking of Ravenwood with Archie and the gang, and being updated and kind of looking back at that. Have you seen more and more of that on the stage rather than just on film? It seems like we seem fascinated as a society right now to look back at what we were 20 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know that I can put my finger on specific productions like that, but it does seem to be we're sort of stuck a little bit in a recycled culture. you know, you're seeing reboots on reboots, and at least with something like Dog Sees God or Riverdale, you're taking a different look at it. Yeah. You're putting that time, and even The Last Breakfast Club, I mean, it's sort of the same thing. It's here they are down the road and revisiting. You're tapping into that, the nostalgia, the familiarity. I mean, you're working with, when you already know the product, you've already got your audience halfway there, you know? So there's something smart to it. I mean, you could even say something like Wicked. It taps into the same thing. It's taking these known quantities and putting a spin on it. It's smart. It's smart business. It's smart art. I think we'll probably continue to see more of that.
I think you're right.
As it's sort of, you know, like I said, it does part of the lifting for you by tapping into those known quantities. And it's just about finding something new and insightful to say about it.
It's also a tribute to how great those works were that
absolutely.
All these years later as adults, we still, I mean, Charlie Brown, oh, good grief, still means something to me
to
today.
Everybody.
So, yeah, I think that's absolutely
I mean,
true.
Multi-generational.
But, well, you know, you referenced the Archie.
Riverdale, yeah.
Riverdale, uh-huh. which we talked about before in this program. It takes the Archie comic series in an entirely different direction.
Absolutely,
it's
yeah.
very dark and very haunting and mm-hmm. brooding, and I think it's coming back. I think it actually did pretty well on its first season, and I, for one, got into it. I thought, what? But it was really, it was kind of Twin Peaks-ish, right?
Mm. Yeah, the little murder.
You never saw that in the 1930s and 40s. I mean, if you saw Myrna Loy and William Powell do Thin Men, it was essentially the same characters, even if they had a baby, even if they had a different job. It was essentially the same characters over and over again. But now it seems like, well, let's see how they evolve. Let's push the envelope a little bit and see where people go after their experiences that we've all been let in on through a TV box or through a film or what have you. I think that's an interesting thing. I think it shows that we're very much more interested in what happens after now, which is a cool thing, and I think that's part of the reason Star Wars is so cool too, because you get to see the before and the after when the before is made after, which is kind of cool. So, well, Jenna, obviously you don't seem to ever stop working. So, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here today.
Thanks for having me.
And we
want to
take
we
want to take a minute to encourage people to go see both of these shows. Are they both at the Blank Theater? Is that correct?
No. So, The Last Breakfast Club's at the Rockwell Table and Stage, and that's playing currently. We're actually have a show tonight.
Right.
Dog Sees God is playing at the Blank Theater. All our performances are at the Blank, and that is a 2-week extension beginning July 15th, ending on July 23rd.
So get them on your calendars now, ladies and gentlemen. Right now, this weekend, you can go see The Last Breakfast Club, and then Dog Sees God is coming up here in the beginning of July. So get those and get tickets for those now if you can.
Yes.
Shall we take a moment, Michael?
I think
and
so.
Do a live arts calendar?
Yeah,
let's
why
do
not?
It. We're going to take a quick break here in our live arts calendar and reach out to our Shakespeare aficionados. Love's Labor's Lost, the 21st season of our region's most popular outdoor theatrical events, opens with the Kingsman Shakespeare Company's production of William Shakespeare's Love's Labor's Lost.
Love's Labor's Lost follows the antics of the King of Navarre and his four young companions who take an oath to devote themselves to 3 years of study and fasting and to give up the company of women.
Unfortunately for them, the Princess of France and her ladies arrive, testing their resolve and the resolve of all the young men in this rollicking tale of
rollicking.
Love. Rollicking. Rollicking tale.
Can't buy those teeth in the mail.
I tell you, rollicking. That's a great word. I'm going to use it now on a regular basis. Rollicking tale of love and language, directed by Kevin P. Kern.
This must-see show opens this Friday with performances Friday through Sunday, June 30th through July 2nd, July 7th through July 9th, and July 14th through the 16th, all at 8 p.m. For ticketing, please visit KingsmanShakespeare.org.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, Kingsman has been around for such a long time, and they always put up fun and entertaining Shakespeare, much like Independent and some of the other great companies around. So.
And that's probably going to be happening out at Will Gear's Botanicum this summer, too. We just opened.
They have other shows coming up, too. Yeah. I think Cal Lu, obviously, where Kingsman is, has such a wonderful campus. It's very inviting, and I think that going to visit that is a great way to introduce children to Shakespeare as well.
Perfect.
Obviously, check their website and make sure the show's appropriate, but there's a lot of fun stuff going on out there. Take a picnic, relax, and have a good time.
Absolutely.
So, ladies and gentlemen, our next guest is a Sacramento native and a graduate of the University of the Pacific in Stockton with a major in theater and a minor in journalism. His first play, a college comedy entitled Hello, This Is the Bottom Drawer, opened in Los Angeles in 1980, and it was a surprise and award-winning hit.
He was subsequently signed to the stable of playwrights at ICM, the drama critics at the Los Angeles Herald Examiner dubbed him the Frank Capra of the me generation.
Professional acclaim continued with Mind's Eye, which won him a Most Promising Playwright Award, as well as the Drama Log Award for Best Playwright. The Legend of the Crystal Waters, which incorporated sign language into and throughout the entire story, garnered him a playwriting award at the American Deaf Drama Festival.
His comedy drama Aftershocks won the coveted International Margot Jones Playwriting Competition. His musical role play, co-written by Adrian Russ, eventually opened off-Broadway under a new title, Inside Out, and immediately sold out its European premiere in Zurich.
Could I Have This Dance, his comedy drama about Huntington's disease at the Colony Theater, was selected by the American Theater Critics Association as Best New Play of 1991. Among numerous other accolades, the Colony production garnered 12 Drama Log Awards, including one for playwriting.
Drama Log Awards being something that was around at that time before the Ovation Awards.
Right, so. And I believe it went to Backstage West Awards and then
yes.
It went through a few incarnations.
Yes,
absolutely.
And recent works of our guest include I, Ghost, Next Window, Please, The Ghost of Gershwin, and Love Again. He is such a talented writer, and we are super happy to have him on the show with us today. Let's hear it for the truly gifted Doug Haverty.
Yeah, that's right. Wait, hold on.
Fire those people.
Your fans were sleeping. Oh. I couldn't believe that. Let's hear a little bit more from your fans.
There they go.
See, whenever I play music, I have to readjust my board. And I sat there and I watched it and I thought, boy, his fans are snoozing out there. I'm going to get my cattle prod out there and start jabbing them.
Well, you know, they have a long bus right here.
That's right.
And
they got tired from hearing his whole bio of the 19 million rewards and awards.
And that was probably just a fraction of his bio, I have a feeling.
Doug, there's so much on you out there and what you've done. But I got to say, Dial M for Murder is something that I'm excited about. We were talking a little bit about it before the show. I did not know that this is by the same author who wrote one of my favorite films of all time with Audrey Hepburn. Who else did we say was in this amazing cast?
Wait Until Dark.
Right, Wait Until Dark. Yeah. Who else was in? Was it Alan Arkin, I think we said, who was in that? And the little girl who I can't remember.
Yeah.
But Wait Until Dark has always, since I was a little boy, scared the heck out of me.
Oh,
and
me Dial, too.
Dial In for
totally.
Murder has a lot of those same totally. Themes. So, Doug, can you tell us a little bit how you got involved with this project and who you're playing in it?
I'm playing Inspector Hubbard. And that was played on Broadway by John Williams, who won a Tony for the part and then went and did the film.
Good luck following that. There you
go. It's a tough act to follow. It's being directed by Bruce Kimmel, who I've worked with in many capacities. And
he's a wonderful director.
Absolutely. Yes, we've seen so much of his work recently.
And
he does great stuff.
He's passionate about the piece, the film, and the play. And so, like Joan, I just wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah. Mm. Fun.
Very
is it,
cool.
Do you like getting up on stage and being an actor as opposed to being, you know, that kind of solemn solo guy that writes plays and composes music?
I started out as an actor, and then I really had much more success as a writer, mm-hmm. but I always missed the acting, that sort of feeling of being on a team.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of went back into it, and I'm really glad I did.
Yeah.
I like doing both. Writing is very solitary. You know,
yes.
You're like, can I hurry up and finish this so we can have a reading so I can see people?
Right.
Do you prefer one side of it more than the other, or do you have a place in your life for both?
Well, when you write something and it works, it's a kind of heaven.
Yeah.
And it's like you get to be all those people.
Yeah.
You're every one of those parts if you created them. So when something works, it's just wonderful.
Well, you
when
know,
it's
very much not.
Your production of Inside Out, which, as we said earlier in the intro here, started in New York under mm-hmm. a different title and then became that. And it was given a production here in Los Angeles for its 25th anniversary year, right?
20th.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
If you listen to the original CD of the show, it is very specific to a time in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people can't relate to that time period and or the music. But it's still in the revival production here in Los Angeles. And it actually started, I think, in Los Angeles first, right?
Yes,
and then it
did.
Went to New York.
Yeah.
And was very successful in New York. It comes back. This revival was also directed by Bruce Kimmel. And that's what I think he was the catalyst for making it feel like it was very contemporary.
Interesting.
And it was still set in the 80s.
Yeah.
But the way that he directed it, the usage of set pieces and his whole take on all of it, and it was immersive too. I mean, you're right there in the theater, you're with these women, and it's all women.
Well, we thought about updating it.
Yeah.
Because we didn't want people to say, oh, this is so dated.
Right.
And Bruce said, you know what? This was when group therapy became popular. Yeah. Let's just say it's a period piece now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And let's just embrace that
right. And
not hide it. We were going to update the names and some of the lyrics and stuff right. Like that. We said, you know what, let's just see how it travels through time.
Right.
Yeah.
And what happened was people came to see it and said, this is great. I related to it. It felt very contemporary. You know, it didn't seem like an old piece.
Sure.
So that was kind of fun.
Well, the orchestrations, I think, were also given a little facelift, right? And the performances by such great women, Sandy Bainum and Adrian Visnick and all of these, you know, top-rate singers in town.
Excellent.
So that was great fun. But...
So it was interesting for me to work with him as a director.
Right.
That was the first time we had done that. And now I'm working with him as an actor.
He didn't boss you around or anything, did he?
Oh, my God.
Not Bruce Gimble.
Yeah. He usually has one person in every play that's sort of like the whipping boy. Oh, hello.
You were that? Oh, God bless you. Well, you know, artists, they have their moments,
well,
right?
And Bruce certainly does a good job of getting a great final portrait out of it, so it's probably all for the best. Is it different to work with somebody? Do you have to kind of switch gears in your head to work with somebody as an actor, or do you still try to give the same kind of basic dynamic relationship of give and take on that?
I find I have to really completely adapt myself to every director.
Yeah.
Because each director has a different way of talking, of different demands they want.
So true.
And I always feel like as the actor, you should just trust the director.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they're asking for, just give it to them.
Yeah.
You know, don't try to judge anything. Just put yourself in their hands and go there.
Yeah.
Does Mr. Kimmel give you some license, though, of bringing to the party a little something different?
Yes, he gives you lots of license, but then he also has very strict demands of what he wants, where he wants you to go.
Mm-hmm. He has a very clear picture in his head from the
very
start.
Clear.
I think that's true. And I think that strong through line, that kind of one cook in the kitchen, I think that comes through in all of his productions that I've seen anyways, to where it is. It's very continuous the entire way through. You look at it and you see that continuity from beginning to end, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, better to behave that way as a director or have that be your method of operation than not have the ideas or you're confused or you keep changing the direction of it, which is only going to have a trickle-down effect with the cast.
No, he has a very clear vision, and it's a very clean production.
Right.
When you see it, you'll see it.
Always his work is clean.
I've worked with very brilliant directors, though, who keep changing their vision. This would be cool to explore. This would be cool. And you get to the end of rehearsal, and you're like, okay, everything was done in kind of parts because there were so many cool ideas that came up midway through.
Yeah.
There was never that strong vision. I think it is interesting what you said about being a good actor means adapting to the vision that you're asked to achieve. Young performers need to hear that because very often a brilliant young performer will walk in and not be able to get the most out of the director they're working with. And that's something that needs to be taught more, I think, to our young artists.
I had a director tell me one time that when he talks to actors, he feels like he is a sports car driver and that you have to learn how to drive
as
an actor.
Yeah.
You're sitting in a new car, and what dials do you push? How far what do you have to say? So I always thought that was interesting to be on both sides of that equation.
Yeah, where did he come up with that analogy? It's like
probably driving a lot of sports cars.
Yeah,
like
he probably has one.
Most of my directors just refuse to talk to actors at all. So. No actors, get out of my way. It's interesting, too. You see an artistic director who kind of puts that in there and who says, listen, I want to craft my artistic staff around my personality, and it almost never comes out quite as well. You need to look at the artistic staff you have and play to their strengths as well. So it's interesting. Now, Dial In for Murder, obviously, it starts this weekend, correct? It opens this weekend?
Yes, we had our first preview last night.
How'd that go?
Friday. It went really well.
Very nice.
People were rapt.
Wrapped.
Yeah,
you know, they were, you know, at attention.
Very nice.
Trying to figure it out.
That's cool. And that's funny because we were talking a little bit before. We said the script is very similar from the film to the play.
It's one of those rare instances
where
you can just hold the script up to the movie and there we go. I can run lines with Ray Milland. That's pretty cool.
Put that on your resume. That's a good way to go.
Yeah.
Well, and it plays until August 13th, I believe, of this year.
It opens tomorrow night.
That's right. And Fridays and Saturdays, 8 p.m. Sundays 2 p.m. correct?
Yep.
Fantastic.
and Sundays at 2 p.m. and Talk Back Sundays after the show on July 9th and July 23rd. And for tickets, it's very simple. You simply go to thegrouprep.com or info@thegrouprep.com.
Which is their email there.
Yes. Reservations and information line is 818-763-5990. And it's at one of my favorite theaters here, small theaters in the North Hollywood area, the Lonnie Chapman Theater. Very comfortable seating, great sight lines, great stage, all of that. And that is at 10900 Burbank Boulevard in North Hollywood. And it's a 90-seat theater, and it is wheelchair accessible. We like to say that when we can. And please allow at least 20 minutes to park, though, because parking is a little heavy in that particular area. And it's free street parking. It's available on Burbank Boulevard and neighboring side streets.
That's right. That's right. And obviously, that's a fun place to go. There's lots of other stuff to do around there, too. If you're looking for a night out, there's good food and other things like that as well.
So, will the audience, are there like super scary moments in the play where it's going to, your audience will jump out of their seats?
there is, if you've seen the movie.
I have never seen the movie.
Okay, cool.
Oh, my.
See,
wow.
This movie is legendary. It's a, you know, one of Hitchcock's.
Yeah. I mean, I loved Alfred Hitchcock.
And a lot of people know it, and a lot of people think they know it.
That's
so
interesting.
So they're coming to the play and going, I don't remember this. And so they're just really fascinated.
That's great. That's obviously great. A great writer and a great piece in general. But on the stage, it's got to be very compelling to see.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that. Can you tell me a little more about the Group Rep and kind of what you guys are based on and what kind of shows you do each year? I know you do some Shakespeare and have some of that coming up as well, correct?
Yes. I think we're in our 43rd year.
My goodness.
That's pretty amazing.
Really?
A small
have you been there all 43 years?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
He's only 29, I'll have you know. That's right.
I guess you could say that I've been attending plays there.
Yeah.
Wow.
For a long time.
Wow.
But, there's really not a mission statement that's particularly unique. We just try to do good plays.
Mm-hmm.
And
that may be unique in this town anyway. So,
yeah. and try to do plays that speak to our audiences and speak to us as artists.
That's right.
And we've done a lot of world premieres. I think I've had four plays mm-hmm. world premiered there.
Wow.
Including Inside Out.
How many company members are in the group, Rep?
There's about 75 to 100.
Wow. And when you do a play and you put out the casting call for it, all of them are priority people
yes.
who can go to the auditions, and
yes.
you try to pull from the company, of course.
We try to pull from the company.
But you do use outside actors.
Yes.
Oh, that's good. Good to know. And is it hard to get in and be a company member?
It's really hard. You have to pay a lot of money.
Do you? Oh. Well, for some, you'd have to.
No, no. We have auditions 3 times a year.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
So you should think about that, Andrew.
Absolutely. I'll be there. I think that sounds like a good thing.
This boy's a good actor, Mr. Andrew David James.
I'm good for good plays.
Well, we were
so
talking about Mark Singer,
uh-huh.
who is
one of my favorites, absolutely.
One of the company members. And Mark actually teaches a private Shakespeare workshop to company members.
Amazing.
It's only open to company members. And he's passionate about it. And he's going to be directing a Shakespeare play there at the end of the year.
Wow.
Well, the first show I ever did was Benedict and Much Ado About Nothing when I was much younger, and I've since played the role 5 different times. I love Shakespeare just in general, because I got into it as a fight choreographer. And so I started dealing with some of the broadsword fights, and I thought, hey, this would be a fun way to make a living. And then I turned 39 and everything stopped working, and I thought, well, that's not so much fun anymore. Mm-hmm. But Shakespeare to me has always held such a special place in the theatrical repertoire. It's interesting because you said you're going to do, I believe, Midsummer this coming up, and then mm-hmm. R&J possibly coming up after that, is that correct?
Yeah.
Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
So, some wonderful important. Sorry, that's what the insiders call it.
Oh, really?
Mac
Did
and
you
all these.
Flip your hair back when
hey,
you said
that's the only
that?
Reason I grow the hair long is so
oh,
I can
I
flip it occasionally.
Oh,
it's interesting too because I think that when you talk about giving a Shakespeare sort of feeling to somebody, Mark is somebody who does that so well, and I think a great Shakespeare actor can change it. Do you know when Midsummer's is coming up? Midsummer Nights?
It's our holiday show.
Interesting. So it will be
in
2017.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. So obviously, if you want to find out more about the Group Rep,
yep.
you can go ahead on Facebook. They're at the Group Rep there, Twitter, and also on Instagram. Find out more about their shows, because this is not only a group that's been around for a long time, obviously, but always fun stuff from the standard shows that we all want to see to some new and exciting works. Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
You know what? I want to circle back to Jonah for just one second because I referenced that we would talk about this during his interview, which we didn't have a chance, and then we'll do our
Let's do it.
Tony Awards was this year. You were there. Your entire family was there. Your first experience at the Tony Awards?
It was my second time.
Well, now hold on. Are you going to tell us why you were there?
Well, I was there to support my brother, Ben Platt, who ended up winning the Tony for Best Actor.
Did you stuff the ballot box?
I didn't have to.
It's pretty impressive. Obviously, a highly acclaimed actor this year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you come from a very talented family.
The man of the hour.
That's right.
For sure.
Fun experience that must have been. Is that your first time at the Tonys?
It was my second time at the Tonys.
Very cool. Very, very cool. What did you think?
We had a blast. It was great. It was fun to all be together and be there supporting Ben, and all of his best friends were gathered around watching, and it was great. It was just a great night.
It was a great shot that the cameras took of Jonah's entire family in that row.
There's a lot of us. We take up a lot of space.
And then when they called his name, it was just chaos.
The Platt brothers are taking over both coasts.
And
so
what a very labor-intensive role for him to play.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Very much so. But he's super disciplined, and he loves it.
Yeah.
He's having a great time.
Wow. Well, congratulations to your brother and to your whole family. So we've come to that time, right?
And now, embarrassing moments.
Are you terrified? I see everybody cowering in their seats over there. Michael, I think we scared them, man.
I think. Doug, are you ready to do this? Oh, he's ready. All right, sir.
Well, mine does not have anything to do with nudity.
So damn it.
5 points that deducted. That's right.
Yeah. I was doing summer stock, and we had just opening our fifth show. This is where you do five shows in a season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever done that.
Oh, yeah.
And you do a different one every night.
All in rep.
Oh, in rep.
They're in
rep.
Gosh. So the fifth show was Oh, What a Lovely War.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know that.
I've heard of it, but I don't think I know the piece.
It was it's a whole bunch of patriotic war songs and all these people doing skits about how fun war is. And then on the proscenium, there's constant statistics about deaths and injuries and stuff.
So is that how it's written, or is
it's meant
amazing
to be a satire of how lovely war is.
Yeah.
And so there was this one part where I realized that we now have five shows in our head, and this is 40 songs.
Wow. Holy cow.
A cast of 20. And there's this one segment where three soldiers, are singing three war songs. And the song starts, the introduction goes, and two of us started singing different songs.
Oh, no.
And so we stopped. And we had a live band, so they started over. So the two of us switched.
And both switched.
Different songs. I mean, so it was three songs in a medley, and we just... And then we stopped again, and then we started, and we all went to different songs. So it happened three times. We all chose, and then we just laughed.
Right.
We just laughed.
Well, the audience must have been with you. Right?
How funny.
But it was horribly embarrassing, and I just remember that moment. I can still see it, because we were in a really bright spotlight, and you just hear your voice going, ah. I don't know what to say.
Boy.
But and I thought the director was going to be absolutely furious with us because he was notorious for that. But he was forgiving.
It wasn't Bruce Kimmel, was it?
No.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah,
Jonah, you got anything for us?
Yeah. Well, mine also doesn't contain nudity, though. I was naked on stage at the Hollywood Bowl for Hair, but that was fun. That wasn't embarrassing.
We're gonna have to come back to that in a minute.
Yeah. My embarrassing one was when I was on Broadway doing Wicked. There is one moment at the end of Dancing Through Life, which I'm already not really a trained dancer. I can move, but I'm not a dancer. And there's a move at the end, at the very end, called it's a tour en l'air, which is basically hands extended all the way over your head, and you jump in the air and you do a 360 spin.
I don't. Whoever's supposed to do it maybe does.
Right.
I definitely don't.
So, and I was always sort of uncomfortable with that move, but I did it. And, I had to do it 8 times a week.
Right, yeah.
And I did about 350 shows of Wicked. Wow. No problems, except for once, where I took my eye off the ball, and I just, when I landed, I came out of it wrong and sort of stumbled towards the front of the stage, and it's right at the front of the stage, so 6 inches from the pit. And there was you could feel a collective
that's right.
And I just had to keep going and did the show, and I put my head down and kept going and like didn't had the blinders on, didn't want anybody to talk about it. I just wanted to keep going. And then the stage manager came up and was like, oh my God, are you all right? We were really scared. I was like, I'm fine. Just do the show. Just get through the show. And thanks for making me relive that.
And it never happened.
It was a great day.
But never happened again, correct?
Never happened. One and only time.
One of the things we tell all our young performers on this show is that you're going to go through a lot of different things and you're going to deal with a lot of different failures and that sort of thing. But coming back from it always leads to the greatest things because you realize you really can get through anything in live performance and the show must go on. So, Michael, obviously a fun show today.
Yeah, great, wonderful show.
Great
so much theater out there to
how
see.
How much do people have to go see now, right? I mean, we've talked about Love, Slavers, Lost. We've talked about Dial In for Murder. The Last Breakfast Club. So there's lots of stuff for people to go see, and we'd encourage you to visit performingartslive.com and some of these eight other great resources to check that out.
The main point is put down the remote, get away from that television set of yours, and go out and support and see and appreciate and enjoy live theater. Because
that's
there ain't nothing else like it.
That's
right.
A big thank you to both of our guests today. Thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you.
We can't wait to see you again. Come back and visit us. Let us know what else is going on, okay?
You got it. Please.
Michael, where do I see you next week?
Next week on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.